You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 2nd, 2010. This is episode 134, Doing Our Research. We're back again for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast, and I am so happy to have Sally back with us after a week without her. We struggled through, Sally, but it's really good to have you back.
Well, thank you very much, Martin. I appreciate you and Gail carrying on without me. It was certainly a blessing that Gail could step in and take care of the show last week. I enjoyed listening to it and putting together the show notes for that. And I'm still down here in sunny Mississippi, and I had to tell you a little bit of a story. We had a special event down here in Mississippi while we were here. Apparently, the National Department of Transportation, all the people from all the 50 states were having a convention here, Department of Transportation convention, mm-hmm. and they decided to time that with an event here in Natchez, where I grew up, lighting of the Mississippi River bridges here. So I'm going to have to put a photo in the show notes of the two twin bridges here in Natchez going across the Mississippi River to Louisiana were lit up for the first time, and I got a bird's eye view of it from up on top of a high river bluff and took some gorgeous pictures. It was just really stunning. I couldn't believe, you know, how impressive it was when they finally lit it. It kind of glowed for a little while, started real subtle, and it just is a really beautiful sight to see these bridges lit up. So
cool.
I was happy to be here for it.
Very
so,
cool.
Yeah,
and when you say lit up, I thought you were going to reference the potential lighting of the oil slick on the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, gosh. That's a sad story right
now.
Oh,
isn't that? Oh.
Yeah. Hopefully they can find a solution soon.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay. Well, we should probably migrate over to a technology topic, you think?
I think so.
I think that's what listeners have come to expect from the show called Wells Tech. And I'm looking forward to playing our interview in just a few minutes with Steven Stelter, who is a graphic designer. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the importance of design for a church. So we're going to be playing, and schools too, and we'll be playing that interview as he talks about some design principles and some of the things he brings to the table and some of the experiences he has had. But before that, we were kind of tossing around a number of different topics, and one that kind of came to my mind, and it really came to my mind just in looking at my newsreader every day, and the enjoyment and some of the good things that I can call from just good internet research. And the internet has made that real easy today to kind of read through different very smart research on all kinds of different topics related to the internet, technology, and for of particular interest to probably to our listening audience, Sally, the religion and how technology has influenced and is influencing the church.
Yeah, Martin, it's amazing how every day little bits and pieces kind of come across your reading that really give you pause to think, and I think it's worth the investment and time to do some of that research rather than just kind of be oblivious to what's going on in the world around you, but actually invest a little time in some of the
right.
Different things that are going on out there.
We are in the world, and the world is becoming much smaller because of technology, and it certainly helps to pay attention if you are ministering in the world, which we all are. It does pay to pay a little bit of attention of, you know, what's going on, certainly in the world of technology. And I don't know if a lot of our churches and schools do pay a lot of attention, but there's probably some value in understanding how their members use technology. There's a lot of research done about how teens use technology, how now senior citizens are using technology, and how their use can be leveraged by the church, and I think that's all valuable information.
And, you know, I guess the Wells Tech podcast is one source for our listeners to keep up with some of that technology. Obviously, we do our best to bring you any breaking news that might be out there that we see that might affect your outreach efforts in your churches and schools. But we also rely on our listeners. And even this week, there were several articles that our listeners shared with us that kind of pointed us to interesting research and trends that are going on in the digital age. For instance, Pastor Tim Wagner shared a link on the Wells Tech Digo group, and it was to a website called Church Raider. And actually, he read about it probably in the Chicago Tribune. There was an article mm-hmm. about it. But basically, this website exists for people to collectively give ratings to their in-church experience. So you can go online and find your congregation and give it 4 or 5 stars if you think it's a good church. Kind of an interesting concept. Not really sure I agree with it, but
right.
Nice to know that it exists out there, and maybe to monitor it in case your congregation comes up, maybe even in a negative light, so that you can, you know, speak to the concerns that might be shared there.
Right. That is a fact of life right now with the popularity of social networks and the availability of finding information through search engines and such. I think potential church visitors are not just solely making a decision based on going to your website. They're going to probably do a little bit more research than that and see what other people, if they find other resources that can provide information about what other people thought of your church, whether it be Facebook or just a search on Google or Church Raider, whatever. I'm sure these sites are going to be becoming more and more prevalent as people are more freer and more frequently updating their thoughts on their experiences with churches, schools, other experiences out there, just like they do for buying a car or purchasing a dishwasher.
Yeah, I'm thinking about finding a good hotel between here and
right.
us. So I rely on those reviews. And if somebody says we had horrible service and the swimming pool was broken and blah, blah, blah,
yep.
you know, I'm going to take their word as God. Basically, and avoid that hotel, and so
regardless of what the hotel site says, right?
Exactly, and so you know, just carrying that trend over areas of our life would make sense that people are going to begin to do this kind of thing for churches and schools.
Yep. Well, Sally, I rely on 3, maybe 4 resources on a pretty regular basis to kind of keep me up to speed on church and school technologies and issues facing those organizations. One of them is a very authoritative source and quoted by very reputable magazines and other news organizations like CNN, and that's Pew Internet, pewinternet.org. It's part of a larger research organization, and they don't always focus just on religious or faith kinds of issues, but they are really focused on technology, social networks, broadband adoption, some things that churches and schools would probably want to pay attention to. So there's a lot of good resources there. Sally, you came across it in a reference on a CNN blog post, right?
Right. There was a recent CNN blog post. The title was "How Church Shopping is Polarizing the Country," and they were looking at Pew Research and tying it to political, voting habits and things like that based on a Pew Research study. So, more and more people are looking for particular denominations based on some of their political views as well. So
right.
It was interesting and certainly ties back to research done by Pew.
Right. Another source, another research source, which is truly focused on religious issues, and that's the Barna Group. Many of our listeners are probably familiar with the Barna Group. Most of their research is available for free and online. And Sometimes they come at it from a church growth kind of perspective, but I think there's some good research data that we could use to our benefit as well. For instance, there was a recent article published back in March on some research they did about how most Americans view Easter, how they would define it. I think that would be extremely valuable research and a good resource as you're trying to craft an Easter message. You know, what are some of your visitors thinking about Easter as they enter your church or your community as you're trying to develop an outreach strategy? How are they viewing the resurrection of our Savior? And what terminology, what words are they comfortable with? What words are going to be confusing to them? So I think there's all kinds of good research that's done that we could leverage there. And the third major tool that I use is Google itself. And Google has something called Google Alerts. It's, I don't know what the best way to describe it, Sally. You basically enter in search terms that you're interested in, and then every day or every week, whatever your settings are set to, you are pushed or emailed articles or pieces of web content that might be of interest related to that search. So one thing, you know, just as an example, I will do a search or have an alert set for Wells. So I'm aware of when Wells is mentioned in the news or in a blog post. The same could be done for technology in church or multimedia or basically any kind of search query you could put together where you don't have to do this search manually. Google has set this tool up so that it just sends you potential items of interest.
Yeah, that's a great way to maybe monitor your church if it's in the news, right, or you know, any particular issue that you're interested in. I do the same Wells search, and it's really amazing to me some of the things that come up, and mm-hmm. it's neat to see the different articles that are out there. And you know, obviously maybe some of them aren't always favorable, and it's nice to know and it as quickly as possible, you know, what kind of conversation is going on around a particular search topic.
Yep. So it's easier than ever to do this kind of online research, and with the use of RSS readers and Google Alerts and those kinds of things, it doesn't have to be time consuming. It's just a matter of setting it up once and then paying attention once in a while to items of interest. And we do our best, Sally, to kind of, you know, raise awareness of some of the, you know, more interesting stuff, but every congregation or school is going to be a little bit different about their interests.
And, you know, I'm thinking, Martin, that we'll include a link in our show notes to our bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode from last summer mm-hmm. when we talked about Google Reader. So if there are listeners out there that aren't making use of RSS capabilities yet, they might want to tune into that past episode and learn how to use Google Reader and subscribe to some of these, particularly Barna Research Group. I have a RSS feed that I'll include in the show notes for that.
Yep, very good stuff. Let's move on to our interview. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we had a chance to sit down with Stephen Stelter, a Wells layman. Where was Stephen from? West Coast someplace, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he's in Washington,
Washington
State.
Washington, right. And we stumbled across his work on Flickr. He had done some work for Pastor Huebner in Palm Coast, Florida. And it was Florida somewhere. He couldn't remember.
And a bunch of other congregations.
Yeah, and
as
a bunch
well.
Of other Wells congregations. And he's got a Flickr site for a number of logos that he's designed. And we thought, hey, it would be great to talk to him about church logo design. And he was good enough to do that for us. So let's listen to our conversation with Stephen Stelter. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, Stephen Stelter from Seattle, Washington. Morning, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for joining us. First of all, maybe if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about yourself, what your church affiliation is, and a little bit about your company and what you do.
Well, my name is Steven Stelter. Like I said, I'm a design director and designer in Seattle, Washington. I grew up in the Wells Churches and School in Wisconsin. I have a BFA from the Milwaukee Institute of Art Design and Communication Design. While I lived in Milwaukee, I worked for the CBS affiliate there, WDJT-TV, and then I worked at a firm doing interactive CD-ROMs, and then I worked for the large advertising agency at Bader Ryder & Associates. After a few years, I ended up in Seattle working with a variety of folks, including Microsoft, T-Mobile, REI, Wizards of the Coast, Seattle's NBC affiliate, King TV, uh-huh. and the ABC affiliate, Como TV.
Okay.
And several other large agencies like DDB and J. Walter Thompson. Just in a variety of creative roles doing all kinds of things. And then I landed my current job as a design director for Fisher Communications. I've been doing that for about 4 years now. And then I've worked on dozens of logos, print projects, campaigns, websites, and TV commercials. Mm-hmm. In the last 10 years, I have done a lot of freelance on my own time, and I've worked with nearly 24 Wells congregations, and also I was the force behind the rebranding of Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Services a few years back. Uh-huh. I did the logo and the initial brand and everything when they rolled that out in 2004,
okay.
3,
yeah.
Somewhere in there.
What was the connection? How did you get hooked up with Wells Churches, and how did they become aware that you did this?
Initially, it was my pastor, Thomas Gum, here in Seattle. He forwarded my stuff on, I think, to the World Missions Office, I think, at the time.
Okay.
It was. And then they just, and it actually at that time landed in the lap of Bruce Teeves, who was the marketing director for a while at the Synod level. And then I started doing different church logos, and then after Bruce went over to Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service, then I worked with him and rebranding them. And so that's kind of how that all went down, mm-hmm. I guess.
Well, Stephen, we're happy to have you join us on the Wells Tech Podcast. We probably, Martin, would call ourselves students of design, always willing to learn a lot more. All of our listeners are trying to put their best foot forward with their church and school websites, and we were hoping that you could maybe give us some basic design tips or even cautions of things that we should be aware of as we work on the design of our website and on logo design in general.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. It's something I see a lot of. I mean, it's hard. I mean, I realize there's a lot of lay people. I mean, the church I'm at now is tiny. It's 100 people. The church I grew up in is one of the biggest in the Synod. And so it's kind of an interesting transition. Mm-hmm. I understand budgets, and I've been involved at the council level of our church here in Seattle. And it's just some of these small, tiny little churches just trying to pay the pastors sometimes. Difficult, and so it doesn't leave a lot of room, and you have to get kind of creative and take on a lot of hats. And so, and I say above all, just trying and being mindful of what's out there. And I say beyond that, the biggest thing I could say for churches and schools and in general is just having a logo is a good start, even if it's simple, even just some words. The logo mark or word mark, as we call it, and the next biggest thing is just having a website. It's back in the old days. I mean, it was scary putting together a website, but these days there's so many templates and there's so many. I mean, the Synod even offers a template that you can customize and get up and running. It's a lot of the hard, difficult work's been eliminated these days. So, and also some tips I have for just in general would be. For a website is, I see this still so many places, and I get to a site and it says under construction. Just don't say that, because every website's always under construction. Uh-huh. They're always changing. They're dynamic. That's what a website should be. It's never finished. You're always adding content. Plus it looks so dating. It makes it look like you're in 1996 still, and maybe you want that. But it's also when you're trying to outreach to new potential unchurched folks or new members. And I get to your site, and all they see is under construction on every page, or even half the page. So it's like, well, what the heck? Maybe it'd be great if just just don't even say that. So moving away from that would be fantastic. And then some other big things that I see constantly is just content and accessibility is really key. Think about your users and not yourselves and what you like. A lot of times we make this too personal. You know, we need to reach the people that we're trying to reach and think about what excites them, what interests them, what drives them. And content should always be written in short, digestible paragraphs, as the average user doesn't want to spend 30 minutes reading belief statements. I've seen this on some sites, and it's just like, it's great that, you know, some people get so technical about various Wells beliefs, but, you know, on the same token, too, it just kind of, you know, bullets are really, really great on the web, because if you think about it, if you visit a web page, you only spend a couple minutes on it generally, you know, and then you move on to the next page and the next page, and their entire time on a website, maybe 15 to 20 minutes is a ton of time, you know, versus, you don't want to drown people right away. So also think about the different kinds of folks that that visit your site, like transfer members, new to the gospel, unchurched, folks looking for a new church home, folks crossing over from other practices of Christianity. Like I said, list what you believe and don't overwhelm with doctrine, you know, and be sure to proofread. That's a big thing. We got some more points here if you want them.
Sure.
So, okay, great. Also build a section for visitors to your church. Tell them what they should expect and how they want you and what they and how you want them to join you, you know, and tell them what types of worship services you have and if you have a quiet room for new mothers or services you offer at your church. If your church is small, say you are. If it's large, just say that. Just be truthful and upfront about, you know, who you are and what you are. And, hey, we're a small church, and we're looking to, you know, we're that family kind of church. You know, we're a large church where everyone can kind of fit in. You know, play off those unique positions that everybody has. Show you're friendly and open and want visitors and new members. Some sites I've checked out, and it's like, geez, wow, you guys really, really have kind of turn that faucet off, you know. And above all, try to get images of your own folks in your church doing stuff. You know, some of the stock images are great out there because they're really expressive and they're fun, but also, you know, don't be afraid, you know, try to find some of your own members and get them up there. And there's more technical things here, and like keep in mind your bandwidth speed, and not everyone has broadband and compress your images. You can research and you can Google that, how to compress your own images to fit your website. And keep them under like 60K each, which sounds really technical, but it's just, you know, the newer digital cameras people take and they have them on ultra resolution and they post that picture in front of your website and it takes 2 minutes to download that on someone's connection, you know. Just try to be mindful of that because, you know, you only get those people for a few seconds, and if it's going to take a long time to download an image, they're probably going to click off. So, you know, and, you know, that's not really great either.
Sure. Let me focus in on the something that it sounds like you're engaged in quite often with Wells Churches, and that's the design process, especially for logos. When you're working with churches, especially, and you do, I think, you know, all kinds of design work, not just for churches, of course, but when you're working with churches, what would be the considerations a church should kind of think through when they're going about a logo design or a refresh of their logo? What kind of questions should they ask themselves?
I think, you know, honestly, who are we? What are we? Where do we want to go? You know, what community are in? And you know, be honest, this is from a marketing standpoint, and I know everyone cringes when I say that, especially the sin of the world.
Right.
What are our competition? You know, I mean, look at the... And I know a lot of Wells churches struggle against some of the bigger mega churches, and because they're all song and dance sometimes, and you know, and that some people really appeal to that. But you know, there's also I'm old fashioned. I like liturgy, so that's my thing. That's myself. But it's like, you know, draw on our strengths and right in front of you always, and it's just a matter of just writing it down sometimes and just saying, you know, this is who we are, and this is what our church is about. If your church has a primarily older demographic, you know, draw on that and say, you know, we have, you know, strong senior services, or we have, you know, always find what your church is, and that helps to shape what you become. You know, that becomes essential to your identity, and maybe that changes over time, and then maybe, you know, looking at that maybe in 10 years or so and looking at trying to refresh that does change. But, you know, always trying to be, I think the biggest thing is always trying to be truthful to what you are. So,
sure.
So, Stephen, if a congregation chooses to work with a designer as opposed to homebrewing their own logo or design elements for their website or print materials, can you give them some tips of what they might look for as they're selecting a designer and what kind of things the designer should be bringing to the table and providing them with his services?
Sure. The biggest thing is finding a designer who's easygoing and patient and who likes to do logos. Not all the designers out there like to do them. There's some designers that do other like projects and annual reports and really love that kind of stuff. The big thing with patience is because with regards to congregations, is sometimes they just, it becomes kind of this, you get a lot of cooks in the kitchen really fast, and everyone goes, well, we should match the carpet of the, you know, of the front of the altar, and believe it or not, I've been there. So that's a big thing. They should have experience creating logos and have a portfolio to show some things. Hey, I've done this, I've done that. And so you can, you know, that way build a little bit of confidence and trust in this individual, and they can hopefully, you know, demonstrate that better. And some communities, don't be afraid to recruit a student from a community college or related colleges, as it's a great experience for them. And just remember, have some more patience as they're not as seasoned yet. The designer should ask a lot of questions and have a creative brief ready for the designer. Most designers will give 3 concepts and up to 3 revisions on a logo project. Mm-hmm. They should have the big thing is also they should have your best interest at heart. But keep in mind that it is an organic process, and it doesn't always go the way you want it to. You may be surprised by the results of it too. You go, wow, you know, we didn't expect to get this particular logo mark, and we really love it. And, just keeping that open mind to that. And the big thing is also, and I can't, you know, I see a lot of church logos out there, and some of them are even designed by designers, and they get it's really easy to fall into the temptation, as I call it, of using trends like bevels and swooshes and drop shadows and gradients and glass reflections and even that Web 2.0 look right now that's going on. And, the reason is those date so quickly, and then us on, you know, you want the logo to last at least 10 years, and if anything, just make a little tweak to it later. So, and then all the files, you know, honestly should be built as a vector file so they can be scalable and editable for commercial printers, sign shops, and screen printers. I really caution, even if a church takes it on themselves, of building a logo in Photoshop, MS Paint, or PaintShop Pro, as those logos are limited to the size they're built at, and they can't be made into signs and shirts very easily. It does pose some problems when we do what we call color separations. So, and a good designer will start in black and white and then go to color and work your way through and be kind of that partner and work with you. So,
I know that whole scalability thing came home to us just recently. We've been working on a school anniversary project, and we decided to have a 5-foot by 5-foot outdoor banner printed, you know, and it's like, gee, can we do that from our little 640 by 480 JPEG image? Not
yeah, exactly.
Conducive to that. So yeah, you may not think of it currently, but there may be definite need to go scalable.
Yeah, a lot of times it's just a matter of education. A lot of people just say, oh, just go on our website and get our logo and you can print it, and everyone goes, no, you can't. It's just once an image has been scaled down to a size that's an image, like JPEG or TIFF or PSV, all these technical file formats, it's forever at that size, or it only can go smaller. If you scale it up, it starts to get really pixelated and blurry, and it just is, it gets really into a big mess really quickly. So, yeah, there's a lot of that. And a good designer will, you know, that won't even be second thoughts, and they're just going to build your logo in a vector environment. And vector is just basically, it's like AutoCAD in a way. And they'll use a program like Adobe Illustrator, Macromedia Freehand, or CorelDRAW. And they should, at the end of the project, provide you with Pantone matching colors so that you can always keep your colors accurate when you're working in that system. And they should also provide you with what we call a CMYK, or a four-color logo, process logo. And they should also give you a black and white version that you can always apply, which the black and white, the printer can easily ink that to be just purple or blue or red, and it can apply it to anything. And then maybe, ideally, you should get a little brand guide of like how the colors break down, like what the RGB equivalents are. So like when people are working on your website, go, what is, I don't, you know, what is that? And that's 255211. Mm-hmm. So you just, these numbers, there's all these weird numbers that are very technical, but Once you start getting into it, you kind of go, well, what is that? And you start learning about it. So it's kind of like when you work on a car.
Mm-hmm.
You realize you need a metric wrench.
Right. Yeah, I've worked with a lot of congregations who have struggled with trying to hand over a logo that could be used in multiple ways. So I think that's really important if you're engaging a designer, that you get all of the files that could be used in many different ways. So if you wanted to put your logo on a church sign, you're obviously going to need vector art so that you've got clean lines, or put it
exactly.
Even on a billboard, or those kinds of applications versus just plugging it into your website, which is a much lower resolution, or you know, putting it on a nice glossy brochure. You're going to need a different file format for that. And those color matching tips are great, because a congregation really needs to come away with all the tools necessary to use this logo in, you know, 101 different applications.
Yeah, it continues every day. It grows to where we go with things. You know, 10 years ago, when I was just finishing school, you know, the web was very, very infant still, and you know, and that was still new. And you know, and it's amazing in what's going to continue to grow and where things will come from. And 15 years ago, no one really even heard of the internet, and
right.
The fact that you needed a logo for the internet, or the logo needed to scale
right.
So small to fit on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that space. I mean, typically a logo on a website, you know, I'm gonna. And in pixel terms, which is not very, you know, it's an abstract kind of concept to many people. It's only
right.
150 by 100 pixels sometimes, and that's such a tiny amount of space. It's a very corner, tiny little bit of your screen.
Right.
And make sure they can be that work that small and work as big on a huge sign out in
sure.
your, from your church. So.
Yep. So where can people find your stuff? I know you have a Flickr page, right, where you've posted some of your logo work, or at least your church logo mm-hmm. work.
Yeah, I'm kind of all over the place right now these days. I have a couple websites I hide stuff on. I try to hide these days just more than anything, because for a long time I was really in the mix of it. I got a lot of logo projects, and it was great, and it was a great blessing to be able to help all those congregations, but it just got to be so much, so I've been kind of hiding lately.
Right.
But my Flickr is a great place. That's or you can just actually Google my name and you'll find me.
Okay. Pretty. And we'll put links to your website and also your Flickr page here as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty findable actually.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're trying to hide, probably coming on a podcast is not the best strategy.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's kind of one of those things. I kind of want to help as much as I can,
absolutely.
But at the same token,
yeah.
too, I actually got a little overextended there for a while, and
right.
churches kept calling, too, and I'm like, well, it's probably going to be a year before I get to you.
Right, exactly.
So, and it's one of those things where that was kind of a great thing, but,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
well,
we do very much
appreciate you taking the time to do this, and hopefully you won't
knowledge.
Be swamped by our listeners, but I think this
yeah.
is really important stuff as a congregation mm-hmm. seeks to use, you know, the facilities that are available today that are very low cost and very essential in trying to create a, you know, we could use the word brand, you know, create an
yeah.
image,
yeah.
you know, what how they want to represent themselves to the world.
Yeah, brand's not a dirty word, and I got to always remind people that, especially in this culture, it's
mm-hmm.
it's a good thing to embrace. It's
right.
It helps.
Yeah.
It helps you stand out, and it helps you look organized, and it helps you just look, honestly, like a professional organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I even try to say not that, because the fact is, everyone goes, well, we're not a company, and I understand that, but on the same token, too, when unchurched folks, you know, visit the website or visit your church, that is your brand.
There
that
are
is
some
you.
Expectations That's, there, yeah.
And, yeah, and if they're checking you guys out, you know, they're interested, and, you know, it's up to you at that moment to make that, you know, to get them finally to, you know, realize, hey, this is where I want to keep going. You know, I want to keep checking this place out, versus they come in and go, well, I don't really like it. And, you know, all those little things, and everything I say here, you know, boils back down to two. You know, when visitors do visit, you know, greeting them and being friendly, and you know, especially, you know, that being coming from a huge church where it's like we forget that, because it's like you don't even know who goes there sometimes.
Right.
So.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's one of those things, too. It's like, you know, making sure that people that do visit feel welcome and have their questions answered and things are accessible to them, too. So,
sounds good. Stephen, once again, thanks. And, continued blessings on your work there in Seattle and at Grace. And I know you've got more than enough to do, but appreciate you taking out some time this morning to talk with us.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to talk with you guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again, Stephen, for your time. Interesting conversation around the things that maybe a congregation would want to look out for, and if they do engage a graphic designer, some tips about what they should ask of him or her.
Yeah, and I think you'll want to go over and check out Stephen's logo design page in Flickr. We'll have that link in the show notes, and maybe it'll give you some good ideas and standards to which you can ascribe to if you're having your own logo designed.
Absolutely. And one place you should put that logo is on your Facebook page, which is in the news lately, right, Sally?
Yeah, you found a great ministry resource to share. 30 churches on Facebook and mm-hmm. observations about them. So if you're looking to make better use of your Facebook page, here's an article that will point you to some great examples of how people are using Facebook for their congregations.
Yeah, Facebook has been in the news recently a lot about their privacy issues, and they're again changing their privacy model, making it more restrictive, making it a little bit more easy for somebody to figure out how to lock things down. But from a congregation's perspective, I think the issue is not all about privacy, but more about what are the uses of it, and probably no better way to figure out how you want to use it than looking at how other congregations are using it. And this blog post does a nice job of outlining 30 churches that are making use of it, and I think we can probably learn a lot from looking at that if your congregation is considering using Facebook. And I think most of them are. Sally, is your church on Facebook?
We are on Facebook. Not a huge number of fans, but we've probably gathered most of the ones within our own congregation that are on Facebook, mm-hmm. and we're able to just post reminders there about events and things like that.
Yep. I think that's the primary use of Facebook for churches right now, at least, is internal communications, just kind of an intranet. You may find somebody that stumbles across it if you're kind of pushing that into a corner of your outreach strategy. But in general, I think it's going to be more an internal, intranet kind of a communication. So that may evolve over time. But if your church is using Facebook, we'd love to hear some of the ways that it has worked for you. So let us know. Sally, should we move on to our picks?
Absolutely.
Were you able to come up with something down there in Mississippi?
Yes, I was. I'm still reading my RSS feed. So came across a great link via the Free Technology for Teachers blog, which is done by Richard Byrne up in Massachusetts, I believe. And he's always sharing great resources. And this one is related to Moodle. Many of you might know that Moodle is a course management platform, a software that is web-based where you can have instruction or training online. In our congregation, we use a Moodle site for some catechism work that the students do online. And maybe other schools are making use of it. I know some of our Lutheran high schools use Moodle for online courses, and certainly Martin Luther College and Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary are using Moodle
Yep.
to deliver online courses as well. What I have is an infographic, another one of those big
images. I love those.
Those are
so cool.
Yep, and this one's called Moodle Tool Guide for Teachers. And what this does is it lists all the possible tools that are part of Moodle, anything from forums to quizzes and anything in between. Just everything you can do within a Moodle course online. And it tells you how easy it is to use and what the appropriate use of it is. Is it good for assessing learning or co-creating content or communication or what? You know, and so you can select the right tool to do the job that you need it to do. And it's all color-coded, and there's good explanations for each thing. You know, if it's easy, if it's not easy, why they've ranked it that way, and then whether it's a great fit or it can work but probably not the best fit or it's not the best tool at all. So really well done graphic put together by somebody at Cat's Pajamas.
Love that name
net.
Too. Awesome,
yeah.
URL.
And you'll want to check this out if you use Moodle at all. It's a wonderful resource for teachers who use Moodle.
Awesome. Excellent. I think, yeah, it's a, kind of a one-pager that at a quick glance you can really tell, you know, what's it good for, how does it fit maybe in my strategy based on who I am and what I want to do. Very good. My pick is an operating system. The we've talked about Linux on this show before, and I've played around with it, and sometimes more seriously than others. But Ubuntu has been in the news a lot, and they have, I think they have pretty much taken over the Linux market as far as, and some would probably disagree with me, but I think from the desktop computing side, Ubuntu is probably the distribution of Linux that is got the most traction now among consumers. So I decided to give the latest version of Ubuntu a try, which is, they have all these funky names. This one is Lucid Lynx. They name them after cats, I believe. This one's Lucid Lynx. And this is 10.4. And what I was particularly interested in trying out was their netbook edition. Netbooks are really popular, but they're, for the most part, pretty underpowered. They have usually an Atom processor or something that's not real speedy, so you need a lightweight operating system, and Ubuntu claims to have optimized that, and I think they have. So I have an HP MiniNote notebook that I've netbook that I've talked about before on the show. I've had it for probably two and a half, three years now. So I decided, well, let me try installing Ubuntu Lucid Lynx on this laptop or netbook. And I'd have to say it was one of the easiest installations of Linux that I've ever done. And what they've done is they've optimized the screen, because netbooks obviously have a small screen. They've optimized how the OS sits on top of it and works. So it's a single click on big icons, and usually the application goes full screen, which is what you always want anyway on a small screen. They've made screen switching or application switching very easy. Just a cool distribution, and it includes a lot of the tools that any student would really need. They have OpenOffice on there. They have a built-in Firefox browser and with built-in links. And I think they've just done a nice job of making what can be kind of an overwhelming operating system for the non-geek very user-friendly. And this is a free distribution, as all Ubuntu is, and you can get a regular desktop edition, netbook edition, in any kind of flavor you want. We've talked about EduBuntu before, which comes prepackaged with educational software. So if you're interested in maybe considering something for yourself, or maybe even for your computer lab, this might not be a bad thing to look at.
Very good. I appreciate you biting the bullet and doing that install. That's kind of a scary thing to go with a new operating system and try it out.
Yeah, it took all of about 5 minutes. It's
cool.
That is one of the hardest, that was one of the barriers to entry for a lot of people. How do I install this thing? And they've actually made that very easy. So if you go to Ubuntu.org? Ubuntu.com, what is it here?
We'll have a link in the show notes.
Ubuntu.com/netbook to get to that distribution. So, and it looks pretty. I mean, it's they've come a long way there too. It's not kind of the, you know, the geek focused you know, desktop that they've always had, but GNOME or whatever, or GNOME, I think they call it. But this is you know, nicely done. They've done a real good job. So take a look, and it's free. So there's
love
no
that price tag.
So, all right, Sally, anything on the promo or Wells.net feature of the week side of things?
Sure. Just a quick mention. We had an email from Jason Patowski asking if the seminary call service, and the MLC call service would be archived online. And all of those great events have been archived on the WellStreams website now. So we'll have a link in our show notes. And if you'd like to go back and relive the moment, maybe you had a vicar being assigned or a pastor or a teacher being assigned, and you'd like to listen to that one more time, then feel free to find those links on Streams and enjoy those videos.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we wanted to make mention of our final web training that's coming up near the end of July, July 19th through 22nd. We'll be doing final web for teachers and a three-day final web for dummies class that is kind of the all-encompassing webmaster view of the site. And you can...
That's the deluxe version.
That's right. You can sign up for those classes in either Milwaukee or New Ulm, Minnesota, and join us. Price is basically $49 a day. If you do the three-day session, you get a discount, and it's only $129 for the three-day session.
Mm-hmm.
So join us if you want. The Milwaukee session is filling up quickly. The New Ulm session has lots of room. So love to have you join me in New Ulm.
Very good. And I'll be doing the one in Milwaukee. So I'd love to have you. Community feedback. So we've got a couple weeks worth of feedback. So let's run through this quickly if we can.
Okay. First up, we heard from Ryan Rosenthal, who's a teacher at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And it was a really exciting email we got from Ryan because the state of Wisconsin has subscribed to a website called Sounds Abound. It's SoundZabound, and soundsabound.com is royalty-free music for schools, and they have just a huge collection of sound clips and music that can be used in all different ways for school projects. But it is a subscription-based service, and the pricing can get kind of hefty if you want to purchase an all-encompassing license. But Ryan had received information about the entire state of Wisconsin being covered through their BadgerLink website. So if you are in Wisconsin and would like to make use of Sounds Abound, we have the information for the state of Wisconsin schools, and would be happy to share that with you. So great resource there. And if you're not in Wisconsin, maybe you want to make use of it and check out the website anyway.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Do you need a .edu email address, or you must have to provide some kind of proof that you are an educational institution to use this?
Yeah, I'm not real sure. I didn't go through the whole setup process. They have it organized in several different ways where you can get to different sections of their content, that kind of thing. But I know that... for Wisconsin schools, you're going to access it through their BadgerLink website, and that's going to give you the access to the site without having to go through the pricing at all.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, it looks like they got a ton of stuff here. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate
the
update. Yep.
Next up, we heard from Alyssa Dunning, who works in our web area for the Senate, and she sent us a link to a new online internet radio option called Groove Shark.
Yep. I tried that out. It's flash-based, so it's a little bit slow to load, so I think they're still optimizing the site. But from what I could tell, and I did a lot of listening over the weekend, this last Memorial Day weekend and the week before, and basically Groove Shark, from what I can tell, is a free site where you can play almost any song that that you can think of for free. It's streaming, so it's not that you're downloading it, but it's basically internet radio, but you get to pick the songs that are played. So you can do a search on an artist or a search on an album, and you just add it to a playlist, and you hit play, and it just plays. You can create playlists. There's a VIP account. And what that allows you to do, I believe, is do some more social networking. I think that's $3 a month or $30 for the year. And it also, I think, allows you to use some mobile devices to grab this streaming audio as well. So you can download an Android app. I don't know if they've got a iPod or a iPod Touch or an iPhone app yet, but I think that's probably in the offing. But if you are an audiophile, and I think they've got all kinds of music, Christian, rock, jazz, you know, big classic, everything is on there from what I could tell. So that is at Groove Shark. I believe it's grooveshark.com, something like that.
Yeah, I don't have it open.
Listen.grooveshark.com. Yep.
There you go.
So give it a shot. That's and we're seeing more and more of these. I've talked about Moog in the past, MOG.com, same kind of deal, where they have a certain price per month. This one is free. Moog is not. So I'm not sure where this is all headed, but boy, it sounds like if you have a song you want to listen to, you'll be able to do it.
A lot more control over things. That's impressive.
Yeah, it's a different model than Pandora or Last.fm, where you pick a song or an artist, and then they pick the rest.
Right.
So they create the playlist of similar artists or similar types of music. This is a little bit different, where you pick exactly what you want to listen to.
That's cool.
Thanks, Alyssa. I appreciate the pick. That's a great catch.
All right. Next up, we have some comments that were left on our show notes website to the episode, which aired 2 weeks ago now, episode 132, Sprig Squared. And in that episode, we talked about accordance. And Perry Lund, who's out at Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa, told us that he uses accordance. He's a Mac guy, and he's used it for the last 4 years, and he's always learning more. So he appreciated the links that Pastor Bauer provided to video tutorials for accordance. He said, however, he's finding that sitting through some pastors' meetings each month, having to learn Greek and Hebrew might be a good thing. So he's considering studying Greek and Hebrew even as a layperson. So wondered if that was crazy or not. And I say more power to you. Go for it.
That's right. Why not? Those are obviously the original languages. That's what the Holy Spirit inspired the writers of the Bible to write in. So there's certainly value in kind of plumbing the depths of some of the nuances of the language of the Bible.
Perry also commented with a clarification on SME storage, which we mentioned in that show. And he says it's actually a management solution for all our cloud storage, including Google Docs, SkyDrive,
Mobile, etc.
So it allows you to have a mountable icon on the Mac desktop that will give you a folder level access to all of your cloud storage in one place.
That's the key. You can have storage all over the place, but if it's like having five different computers, if you can bring them all together in one place, that is awesome.
And he says it's also a storage location you can use as a backup for all your cloud storage locations.
Right.
So he backs up his Mobile Me to his SkyDrive account,
so you're,
things like
your
that.
Cloud, you're backing up your cloud storage with another cloud storage solution. Yeah, it gets complicated.
I'm getting a little confused, but sounds like a great solution. Thanks for sharing that, Perry.
Great.
Finally, Perry sent a link out to the new iPads in education thing. So if you are using iPads in an education setting or considering it, you might want to become part of the specialized Ning social network and learn from others who are doing the same. And we appreciate that link as well. Following up on that same episode, Maren McPeak, who's out in California, I believe, sent us a link to Toodledee-Doo. Toodledoo, maybe that's how you say it.
Toodledoo, I think. Yep.
Okay, and she uses that for task management on multiple platforms.
We'll very familiar with that. I use that all the time. Because you can buy, or not buy, you can download syncing software that will sync up, let's say, Outlook, your Outlook tasks with the online version of this Toodledoo software or Web 2.0 application. And then you can get little apps on your iPhone or Android phone that'll read that. So it gives you kind of the portable nature of your task list, which is kind of important, because if you're really using your task list effectively, you don't want it just on your computer. You want it wherever you are. So if you have a smartphone with internet access, many people do at this point, or Wi-Fi access, then you've got it in your pocket as well.
Absolutely. Powerful stuff.
Yep. And that's free, by the way, that software.
All right. Next up, we heard from David Schumann, who's a member at Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin, and he was looking for summer resources for kids, particularly Bible-oriented resources for kids to make use of during the summer break. And one in particular that I wanted to point out was KidsConnection.tv, which is our kid-oriented website sponsored by the Synod. And there you'll find all kinds of games and puzzles and Bible-oriented resources, as well as previews of Kids Connection and the Bible stories that go along with the monthly Kids Connection video series. So check out kidsconnection.tv.
Very good.
And last up, Martin, I think you had a link to share with us you had put out on the DIGO website.
Yeah, I found I'm always on the lookout for web-based color management tools, maybe is the best way to put it, because I am color challenged. This is a tool that leverages a couple of other tools that we've mentioned in the past. Color, K-U-L-E-R from Adobe, and Color Lovers. It's with a U, the English spelling. Basically combines those and kind of does a little bit of magic where you upload your logo or an image and it will craft four different color palettes that you could choose from. The site is Pictaculous.
There
yes.
you go.
Pictaculous. So you can upload a PNG, JPEG, or GIF up to 500K. You fill out a little bit of a form, and then in a couple minutes, it'll break the image down into a four-color palette that leverages some of these other websites. So you've got it all in one place, and then you can pick, saying, I want contrasting colors, I want similar colors, I want a monochromatic look, and it kind of takes the guesswork out of it for you and then gives you the hexadecimal code for it or RGB values for it as well, so that you've got a good color palette to work with. So what should my background look like, or what if I have a call out box, what color should that be? So really helpful for web designers to be able to mix and match their color palettes on their websites to match their logo.
And I believe I saw somewhere that this is powered by MailChimp, which yep. is one of my favorite, easy-to-use email newsletter generator sites. And so, we have confidence in their tutorials and support of MailChimp, making it super
quality
easy.
Stuff,
so
yeah.
I'm sure that this is done very well as well.
I think it's tied in with their template generators as well, so that's why they're interested in it. If you're familiar with MailChimp, you can upload your content and pick one of their templates, and then you can tweak it.
Nice stuff.
Next week, Sally, we get to finish the book that we started many months ago. At least it probably seems that way to you. The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture by Shane Hipps. So we've got book week next week, and the exciting conclusion as we kind of wrap up all the loose ends and figure out what this electronic culture that we live in, how that has impacted how we communicate and how the church communicates. So tune in next week for a wrap up of that book.
Wouldn't want to say that I'm getting it all, but I would say that I've learned a lot in the course of that book, and I'm looking forward to the last chapter.
It's I guess the phrase that I'd use to attach to that book is thought-provoking. That makes
there
you
go.
It makes you think, and it kind of makes you stop a little bit and say, why are we doing what we're doing with technology? Which is very apropos to this show. Let's close the show, as we always do, with the music of a Wells artist, and the Wells artist this week is Koine, and their song Draw Us to Thee from their album Church Bells. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and Sally, so good to have you back.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Take care, everybody.
Steps forever and hasten on where thou art. that we may be forever free from sorrow, grief, and sadness. Draw us to thee, O grant that we may walk the road to heaven. Direct our way, lest we should stray, and from thy paths be driven. Draw us to thee, that also we thy heavenly bliss inherit, and ever dwell where sin and hell no more can vex our spirit. Let us fall.